Welcome to the audiobook, The Only Motivation That's Permanent. You know, I've heard too many whiners, moaners, and complainers bellyache about how nothing ever motivates them. Their boss doesn't motivate them. Their job doesn't motivate them. Their parents didn't. Their spouse doesn't. Their kids don't. Nothing seems to light them up or excite them. Well, cry me a river. How about taking some personal responsibility? Hi, I'm Rick Hocek, president of Soar with Eagles. I help ambitious leaders and teams to be successful, self-motivated achievers. My answer to these people is, you're looking for motivation in the wrong place. There is only one motivation that works, only one that has lasting value, and only one that can be permanent. And that is what we're here to talk about in this audiobook. I've spoken to audiences all over the world for almost 30 years on topics like winner behavior, personal goal setting, leadership excellence, and self-motivation themes. This is right in my wheelhouse. So let's dig into what is the only motivation that's permanent and how you can make it work for you every day. To create this audiobook, I was interviewed by David Wright, president and CEO of Insight Publishing. So it's a question and answer format. So sit back and enjoy The Only Motivation That's Permanent.
Rick Hocek's singular company purpose is to provide high-octane, world-class strategic planning systems for business and life, helping top gun leaders, teams, and individuals to succeed. On purpose, most of the time, rather than by accident, some of the time. He does this four primary ways. The first, facilitating his power planning, strategic planning retreats for small and mid-sized companies. Secondly, leading his passion planning workshops for ambitious individuals on self-motivation, personal life planning, and goal setting. Thirdly, delivering high-energy motivational keynotes. And last, one-on-one success coaching. He has coached entrepreneurs, CEOs, presidents, and senior executives for over 10 years and is a former president of Ross Roy Advertising, an Atlanta advertising agency and division of the $700 million Ross Roy Group. A University of Missouri graduate, he is a member of the National Speakers Association and has been recognized in Who's Who among the U.S. executives and Who's Who in Georgia. Rick is married and passionately devoted to his soulmate, Robbie, adores his awesome grown twins, Val and Chip, and has four fantastic life passions: his family, his personal health and fitness, helping others prosper through his business and friendships, and playing competitive baseball on a traveling men's team. Rick, welcome to The Power of Motivation.
Thank you, David. I'm honored to be here.
So let's get right to it. You've spoken on motivational themes for many years, and you've studied it, you've witnessed it, you've lived it. Tell us what you feel are the main sources of human motivation that can provide the fuel for a person who needs to achieve.
Well, this is actually a great place to start, and you hit my hot button right off the bat. And this is actually simpler than most people think, but it's not the answer that the masses want to hear. It's singular, really. It's not plural. There is only one source of motivation that fuels a person's achievement, not several sources. And it's the only kind of motivation that works reliably, that has a prayer of extended life. It's the kind that is self-generated, internally produced, or motivation that comes from within you. It's self-motivation. Why? Because it's the only motivation you control. All other forms of motivation are externally induced, meaning they come from some outside external stimuli that you do not control. We mistakenly think that we're motivated by external events and other people, that a near auto accident, for example, will make us buckle our seatbelt in the future, that hearing our dream job opportunity will cause us to pick up the phone, get off our butt, and take action, that a rainy weather forecast for tomorrow will push us to cut the grass today, or that a tough grading teacher will make us study harder for the big exam. But all of that is baloney. Not one pinch of it is true. If it were true, it would work universally for everyone, but it doesn't. Why not? Because every person makes individual choices to suit themselves. Many people involved in auto accidents or near accidents do buckle up afterwards, some for the rest of their lives, others for only a few weeks until the memory wears thin, and still others don't change their behavior one iota, continuing to not wear a seatbelt as they always have done. So the event had no universal impact. It had different impacts on different people. And that brings us back to individual choice. Each person exposed to the same external event made an individual choice as to their self-motivation regarding the wearing of seatbelts. The bottom line is, people, events, and things all from the outside don't motivate us. Leaders can't motivate followers, coaches can't motivate athletes, teachers can't motivate students, parents can't motivate their children, doctors can't motivate patients, events don't motivate anyone, and on and on and on. No person, regardless of position, power, wealth, or influence, can motivate another person unless that other person chooses to be self-motivated. And that choice comes from within, period, exclamation point.
Is there other proof of this? I mean, more examples that can illustrate your point?
Oh, yes. The proof is everywhere. The world is full of average Joes who were exposed to the same opportunities for success, the same smart and powerful people, the same killer ideas as the real winners were, but they did nothing with it. And that's an individual internal choice. Of course, few of them see it that way. Most will blame everything but themselves, but that's the truth. Losers seldom see reality that they are their own worst enemies. More proof? Criminals seem to be unfazed by the threat of prison. They rob liquor stores anyway. People still tell lies despite the embarrassment and pain of getting caught. Monsters like Adolf Hitler, Saddam Hussein, and Osama bin Laden still terrorize people and countries, risking violent backlash and possibly their own death. U.S. prisoners of war know full well that their captors will torture them to get critical information, but brave and loyal soldiers resist anyway. And what mother hasn't felt like she's talking to a wall when her kids ignore her stern orders and do what they darn well please, oblivious to the threatened penalty? So yes, the proof is all around us. A few years ago, I gave a speech on self-motivation to a small group in Boston, and I covered this point in detail. One audience member was getting noticeably restless and fidgety at his chair, and he seemed to be bursting with something to say. Finally, having none of it and apparently perturbed with my point of view, he raised his hand and he said forcefully, "So you're telling me that Bill Parcells, one of the greatest football coaches of all time, can't motivate his players?" Parcells at the time was head coach of the New England Patriots, and evidently I had drilled deep into this guy's nerve center. He was obviously a huge Parcells fan. "Yes," I said, "that's what I'm saying." "Well, that's ridiculous," he shot back. "Parcells wins everywhere he goes. He turns around teams. He makes players great. He makes great players out of average ones, and how can you say he can't motivate his players to excel?" "Well, I agree with you," I countered. "Parcells does have a track record of success. That much is undeniable. But our point of departure is in how he does it. Parcells is successful leading others, not because he motivates them, but because he is able to inspire in them their individual sense of self-motivation. He isn't able to get the best out of them. He's able to get them to get the best out of themselves. It's their choice to respond, not Parcells' ability to force. The power of deciding to act, then actually taking action, rests with the players, not with Parcells. Further proof of this is that many leaders, Parcells included, have penalty systems when players don't comply with pre-stated rules. Penalties like not starting a game or sitting out an entire game, suspensions for misbehavior, and even monetary fines. Isn't it interesting that some players still violate the rules even while knowing in advance what the penalties are, while others do not? Why? Individual choice. Different levels of self-motivation. Parcells can't make anybody do anything. No leader can. Each individual decides for himself. Well, anyway, that's what I told him, but I think the guy still didn't like my answer because in his mind, I was attacking one of his heroes.
Interesting viewpoint. So what's the next step? In other words, once a person accepts responsibility for self-motivation, not expecting it to come from the outside, how does he or she parlay that into a successful outcome?
Well, by doing what all successful people do, taking action. That one secret is the springboard to more achievement than any other single factor. And the lack of it, the unwillingness to move, to go, to do, to get up off your duff and act, is the real cause of most of life's dissatisfaction, anger, and frustration that gets mistakenly attributed to other causes. And frankly, that drives me nuts. Listening to a whiner moan and complain about how he doesn't get any breaks, everyone is against him, and nothing goes his way, is pure self-pity founded on nothing factual. Hey, winners suffer from all the same setbacks that losers do. They just handle it differently. Winners swing into high gear and take action. losers get that deer in the headlights look and freeze. And then to save face, they start that hideous blaming, finger-pointing, complaining, griping, poor-me routine. Whiners, moaners, and complainers get no one's respect. But let's get back to the winners, because the model for success rides with them. Now, what two traits do winners have that leapfrog them ahead of the pack? One, a bias for action, and two, a willingness to fail. And you can't really have one without the other.
Talk more about that. There are so many conflicting opinions on failure, on whether it's a source of discouragement or whether it has some positive value. What's your take on failure?
I have two strong opinions on failure. One is, to win, you have to be willing to let failure happen. Not just to risk failure, but to actually fail, to be embarrassed, to look foolish, to have your family, best friends, and business associates think you're an idiot. It's going to happen anyway, so you might as well accept it, not fight it, and get comfortable with it. When you increase your volume of action, you simultaneously increase your rate of failure. It's inevitable. The more you do, the more you fail. Winners fail much more frequently than losers do, a fact that, by the way, surprises losers. So think about this. Winners don't win more frequently just because they're good, but because they make more attempts. Now, I don't believe all the very best baseball players in the world are in the major leagues. Many are, but many more are there because they outlasted the better ones who quit too soon. They had greater staying power, even if not better talent. Same is true for the NFL, NBA, NHL, and all professional sports. Same is also true in business and in life. Persistence ultimately wins, but you have to be willing to fail a lot to get there. Robert Fulton overcame mounds of public ridicule when he proclaimed he would invent a steam-powered boat, criticism from people who believed it could never be done. But he pressed on anyway, and he succeeded. Sports team managers call controversial plays in crucial situations that bear strong risk of failure, and many plays do fail in front of thousands of fans. Now, those managers knew the risk, and they did it anyway. My second opinion is, and after all this talk on failure, it's going to surprise you, I don't even believe in failure. It doesn't exist. In my value system, there is no failure. Only undesirable outcomes from which we learn, grow, and improve. We remember Thomas Edison for, among other things, inventing electric light. But he failed some 10,000 times before he finally succeeded. Now think about it. His failure to success rate was 10,000 to 1. And yet we remember him for successfully inventing electric light, not for his many more attempts that didn't work, which most people have never even heard about. In fact, he was quoted as saying, "I successfully invented 10,000 ways electric light wouldn't work." Now, how's that for a positive attitude? We forgive failure if it leads to an eventual success. Heck, we practically ignore it. Boston Red Sox fans are in such a high state of elation over winning the 2004 World Series, they're willing to virtually forgive the frustrating 86-year wait from the last one. So sticking with it when others fold their tent often produces an eventual victory and gets you labeled successful. Another example, look at the best golfers throughout history. Jack Nicklaus, Arnold Palmer, Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson, and a cadre of others. How many times have you watched any one of them on TV shank shots in tournament play, often many times in a single round, only to slowly, methodically, one stroke at a time, weave their way back into contention, then into the lead, and eventually to victory? Well, that happens all the time. Now, in life, very seldom does everything go your way. There are always obstacles and problems. Bottom line, if you want to win more, quit seeing all the undesirable outcomes along the way as deal-killing failures, because you'll also start to see yourself as a failure. Don't go there. An undesirable outcome is nothing more than one new piece of valuable information on the road to an eventual success if you stay with it. So the lessons are, to win, you have to be willing to look like a jerk, and you have to disavow failure as a concept.
That looking like a jerk thing is very real. It's scary ground for many people. Isn't that what causes people to hold back, to not go for the gold, to not pursue their most ambitious life dreams?
Oh, it's a huge part of it, yes. But strangely, fear of failure often masks the real culprit, fear of success. And that may seem odd that anyone could be uneasy about success because we connect it with achievement, joy, pride, glory, and money. And who doesn't want those? But fear of success happens all the time, and here's why. There's an unconscious conversation inside our heads that goes like this. If I succeed at this, everyone will know I can do it and will never accept less from me again. expectations of me will elevate, so I can't be my comfortable, safe, happy-go-lucky, fun-loving self again. I don't need that pressure. I think I'll just fail at this and keep everyone's expectations of me low. Then, when I occasionally succeed, everyone will think I'm a hero. Now that I can live with. You know, the 3% who are the constant winners have found a way to override that conversation in their heads, to not let it control them, to ignore it or eliminate it from their thinking. But the masses who, as Thoreau said, lead lives of quiet desperation, trudge on, unaware that conversation is happening, wondering why nothing ever seems to go their way. And the worst part is, failure is often easy to live with, because it brings out sympathy, understanding, and support from family, co-workers, and friends. Oh, it's okay, you gave it your best shot, don't feel bad, they'll say. Or, hey, it just wasn't in the cards for you. Who needs that much responsibility anyway? You know, mostly people who offer these supportive statements, while well-intending, are often dealing with the same fear of success demon themselves, and it's holding them back too. So their unspoken, selfish feeling about you is, I really don't want you to succeed because you'll blow past me. You'll leave me in the dust, and you may not want to be my friend anymore. So stay back on my level with me. You know, that kind of friend, no one needs.
Okay, jump into what we can do about all this. For those serious about improving their lives and outcomes, serious about becoming more self-motivated, and serious about overcoming fear of both failure and success, what action steps can we take?
Well, lots of things. First, recognize that you probably have limiting beliefs. Got to get rid of them. They'll destroy any chance of success. Beliefs drive our decisions, and decisions drive our actions. So if you're not clear on what your deep-held beliefs are, look at your own actions, the things you do. They are your best clue to what your beliefs are. Here's an example. Many people have limiting beliefs in the area of wealth. They think that they are not deserving of money, that wealth is tied to greed, that rich people are all pompous jerks, or that since they were raised in a middle-class family, they aren't entitled to grow beyond that without losing face in the family. So they self-sabotage, sometimes consciously, often unconsciously, but they never admit it. And instead, they save face by ridiculing people who make lots of money when secretly they want to be those people so bad they can taste it. Now, why do they behave this way? Trace it all back to limiting beliefs about money. Got to get rid of limiting beliefs. Another action is learn to obey the impulse and act now. Losers can't pull the trigger. The more you build the habit of obeying impulses, even without all the information you think you need, the greater and faster your sense of self-motivation will develop. Nike's old ad slogan, "Just do it," is a great mantra to follow. More often than not, we have the facts we need. And by taking action, whatever facts you don't have will reveal themselves as you go, so you can course correct on the fly. The point is, don't overthink, do. Another point, no plan ever survives its collision course with reality. As soon as you act, some things will not go as planned, forcing you to alter your next actions. This fear of derailment scares the living daylights out of many people and keeps them couch-bound. Get over it. The best way to beat that fear is to face it head-on. The next time you feel it, take a deep breath, grit your teeth, and move. If you do this enough times, you'll see it's more painless than you ever thought, that failure isn't a given, that you can handle obstacles, and that you can think on your feet. And that's a tremendous spirit lifter, and eventually it'll drive you to greater self-confidence and inner motivation. Here's one that's huge. Get rid of negative people in your life. We all have a few surrounding us, and the older I get, the more selective I become in who I let into my inner circle of influence. I only invite caring, like-minded, success-driven winners who have my best interests at heart because I have theirs at heart. Chronically negative people will drag us into their misery if we let them. Don't. Remove them as influencers. And let me be clear, by getting rid of them, I don't mean doing them harm, nor do I mean embarrassing or humiliating them. Always respect their human dignity. I simply mean quit spending time with them. Don't hang around them, give no credence to their advice, and ignore their negativity. And if you have to spend time with them, like in a work environment where you don't control their employment, then you may have to tolerate their presence, but don't let them influence you. Sometimes you just have to suck it up and sweat it out.
So what about the role models as a source of inspiration? Are they valuable in life development?
Well, they are when they're decent, ethical, high-achieving role models. Those who are boisterous, arrogant, and unethical aren't. Role models are really best when they are mentors who work directly with you on a frequent basis, often one-on-one, devoting focus time to you. I'm not talking about role models you know from a distance, like a pro athlete you admire but you've never met. I think learning from a mentor, the good kind, is the quickest and most intense of all ways to learn, better than anything else. And it's more focused, too, since it's generally one-on-one. Other forms of learning are good, but they're less efficient, like classroom, books, tapes, CDs, videos, seminars, lectures, speeches, and others. And while each of those has strong merit for the go-getter, none of them provides the ongoing one-on-one benefits of a knowledgeable mentor. I mean, hey, I give speeches, seminars, and workshops all the time, and I've written other books. But I'll be the first one to tell you that unless you have an accountability agent to hold your feet to the fire, those tools alone may not be enough. You may struggle with taking action because you have only yourself to depend on for a push. I always encourage clients to create their own 5 to 8 person eagle team of caring, like-minded, success-driven people who have their best interests at heart and who will meet monthly for laser-focused discussion to help each other achieve personal and professional success. We are all more self-motivated with someone else to hold us accountable. Whether your mentor is one person or a small group of dedicated people, it's an awesome arrow to have in your quiver.
What about those obstacles along the way, those nasty nuisances that block us from accomplishing our task or getting what we want? How do they affect someone's self-motivation?
Losers, a lot. Winners, very little. To a loser, an obstacle is another reason to feel sorry for himself and quit. To a winner, it's a source of new information from which to learn, grow, improve, and press on. Here's a great way to look at obstacles. Consider an eagle. The same thing that prevents an eagle from faster flight, wind resistance, is what allows it to fly in the first place. No wind resistance, no flight. Cannot fly in a vacuum. The point is, wind resistance is an obstacle. Yet without that obstacle, nothing happens. And that's a metaphor for everything in life. Obstacles don't block us. They provide us with the energy, the fuel, the knowledge we need to have anything we want. The next time something horrible happens to you, that you think is trying to tell you to give up and go home, try redirecting your thoughts to this. That roadblock was given to me as a gift. A golden opportunity to learn, grow, and improve, and ultimately succeed if I just hang with it. In his books and tapes, Tough Times Never Last, But Tough People Do, Dr. Robert Shuler devotes lengthy discussion to the subjects of problems in life, and he cites his beloved Crystal Cathedral in California as a perfect example. In its finished form, it's a beautiful, awe-inspiring structure, but getting to that endpoint was a virtual nightmare of problem after problem. From before the first dirt was moved, through construction, all the way to the final build-out, it was fraught with every imaginable problem. If it could go wrong, it did. Every inch of the way, Dr. Shuler's mettle was tested, and with each obstacle, he faced a choice. Give up or go on. And while most people would have quit, and he was certainly presented with hundreds of opportunities to throw in the towel along the way, he did not. Every obstacle was there for a reason. His job, he thought, was to figure out what, learn from it, and press on. He did. And the finished structure is proof of his tenacity, his self-motivation to overcome every obstacle, no matter how tumultuous.
Let's get back to other specific tools our readers can use to drive their own self-motivation. Could you give us more examples?
Well, in one of my other books, Conversations on Success, Volume 4, I talk at length about finding your passions and living them every day. Those things that you make time for when no time exists, things you relentlessly spend time, energy, and money on in the pursuit of excellence, things that give you an empty feeling of loss when you can't make time or be your best, things that make your face light up and electrify your personality when you talk about them. Passions are a huge source of self-motivation. So many people lead lives that are boring, meaningless, and void of excitement. And that's their fault, by the way, not the rest of the world's, which is who they usually blame. Anyway, get crystal clear on your passions and commit to living them every single day. Devote large blocks of time to them. This means, by the way, getting rid of non-passions, which is one of the healthiest things anybody can do. It's a worthy trade-off because life is way too short to settle for less. In another of my books, Success is a Decision of the Mind, I lay out an entire systematized approach for life planning, which, taken in total, is the best formula I know for producing self-motivation. All the tools are right there discussed in great detail. Let me briefly hit the high notes now. Here are six of the biggest that I haven't already mentioned in this interview. One, get clear on your life mission. It is the core purpose that you have for being on this planet. Two, discover your core behavioral values. They are the best decision-making criteria you'll ever have and ever need. Three, keep an ongoing master want list of everything you've ever wanted to be, do, and have. Four, maintain a running list of fulfilling life events, all your proud moments, rewarding accomplishments, and goals achieved. Five, actively engage in goal setting, one of the most powerful human self-motivators. And six, use positive affirmations every day, self-talk, to fuel the fire of self-esteem. Now, don't leave any of this to chance or memory. Go out and buy a three-ring binder and create your own personal goal book, giving each of these elements its own tabbed section. In fact, divide your life into eight areas and give each of them its own tabbed section, too. The eight areas are career, financial, health, family, self-improvement, spiritual, adventure, and business. Now, this binder creates a systematized approach and requires time and attention on a regular basis, daily, weekly, monthly. Winners use systems to organize and simplify. Losers shun them as too much work. So be a winner and get this goal planning system in gear. And speaking of goal setting, here are a few tips to make goals self-motivational and lower the odds of throwing in the towel halfway through. First, commit your goal to one sheet of paper. Writing down your goal and all the other components I'm about to tell you make it a real commitment. My rule of thumb is, unless and until you write it down, you're not serious. You're just fooling around. Second, always set a deadline for completion with a specific month, day, year. Human beings respond to deadlines, and the absence of one gives us no urgency to start. Third, list out all the benefits that will come to you by achieving the goal. Now, this is critical because it ties to your level of passion. If there aren't enough compelling benefits to you, you may get derailed. Fourth, think of the resources you'll need for successful completion, like skills, knowledge, tools, money, or support from others. Fifth, think of what obstacles might come your way and have an alternate action for each. This is contingency planning, and it's very important. Sixth, always write out a step-by-step action plan with due dates for each action. And last, proudly sign it at the bottom of the page. Your signature is a catalyst for emotional commitment, and it launches you into action. Now, I go into greater detail on this systematized life planning approach in both of those other books, which, by the way, can be purchased off my website, www.soarwitheagles.com.
Rick, this has been a great interview, and I think our readers have lots of ideas to think about and tools to work with. Any final thoughts?
Oh, yes, actually. Let me leave you with one more important tool for self-motivation. Feedback. It is huge. It's easy to lose motivation because you're not getting feedback on how you're doing. Parents, teachers, coaches, bosses, coworkers, even spouses and friends can all contribute to your demotivation if you let them by not providing valuable feedback. And there's a simple solution to this. Ask. Don't rely on them to tell you. Go ask them. And don't take their first answer either, which is often a blow-off, I don't want to hurt your feelings answer. Keep asking multiple times, going deeper each time. A good rule of thumb is ask the same question three times, three different ways, and take the third answer. Here's an example. Question one might be, how am I doing for you? Question two, if there were three things that you wish I would do more of, what would they be? Question three, what are my coworkers specifically saying about how I'm doing? Now, notice that question three is from a third-party perspective, which gives the person you're asking permission to tell the truth because it's presumably coming from others. Yet what you'll get is his opinion. Now, in this three-question set, ignore the first two answers and pay attention only to the third. It's the most truthful answer. Oh, and one last point on feedback. All feedback is not positive. You have to be willing to hear the bad with the good.
Thank you, Rick. Lots of meat our readers can sink their teeth into. Today, we've been talking to Rick Hocek, keynote speaker, workshop leader, strategic planning facilitator, CEO, coach, and author. Rick, thanks for your valuable thoughts on the power of motivation.
Self-motivation, David. It's the only kind you control and the only kind that matters. And thank you. It's been my pleasure.
Hey, it's me, Rick Hocek, jumping back in. If you liked this audiobook, I just want to tell you there's a lot more where this came from. If you'll go to my website, www.soarwitheagles.com, S-O-A-R with Eagles, E-A-G-L-E-S.com, and click on Shop Store, you'll see all my digital products, audiobooks, ebooks, videobooks, and paper books too. My topics will help you be a better leader, teammate, parent, coach, and person. I have books on goal setting, winner behavior, self-motivation, leadership excellence, strategic planning, and team success. And if you're a high achiever, most any will be right for you, your coworkers, your teammates, your family, and your friends. That website again is www.soarwitheagles.com. And if you need an in-person keynote speaker, personal goal setting workshop leader, a leadership trainer, or a strategic planning facilitator, call me at 770-391-9122 or email me at Rick, R-I-C-K, at soarwitheagles.com. Thanks for listening, and today, be the best you can be.